Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Rad Gontos, where are you? We're looking for you. Oh, no Rad Gontos here today. We're seeing an empty chair and a guest. So I guess I'm going to have to start off for him here. I am not just the co-host today. I'm going to have to be the host here. So welcome to another episode of The Rad Life. And as you tune in many times, Rad is always out racing in. He'll come racing in at the last minute. In fact, there he is. Come walking in just as we say this. Speak of the devil himself. While we're doing that, we'll introduce his guest here as he walks through the screen. We have Carlos. Is it Guaman?
Yes.
Guaman.
Guaman.
Guaman. From El Triunfo. And El Triunfo is what? What does El Triunfo do?
El Triunfo Corporation is a consulting firm that helps Hispanic community to get the business up and running and make sure they go to make money and help the Hispanic community also to create new, find jobs and get everybody on the American dream.
Oh, well, sounds wonderful. So give us some specifics. What do you do? Do you financial planning? Do you do real estate? What services do you offer your Hispanic clientele?
We help the Hispanic community to start their business. Let's say you want to create your own OC Talk Radio. Okay. We help you to create an incorporation.
First of all, that's impossible. Nobody else can marry that. But yeah, or you want to create your own restaurant. You want to create your own something, OC Talk Radio. So
yes,
we do the legal stuff to help them get incorporated and the permits and the licenses and everything.
That's correct. The second step that we help everybody in the office is to have the bookkeeping in place, as well as the insurance, because insurance is important, like work. Comp, general liability, and the next step is to create your tax return. So as soon as we have
I could use, you just rattle off three things I'm bad at: tax returns, liability, insurance.
Did you give him your card?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I may have to talk to this guy here. Okay. And bookkeeping. I do my own bookkeeping. This is horrible. It's nuts.
Yes, but we can help you so you can focus on your business and leave the bookkeeping to the experts.
Okay.
Because there's also a lot of changes that happen that you are not aware of. And you can't keep up with.
And you know that kills most small businesses. I've opened bars and restaurants. I've had a PR firm. Now I've had this for 5 years. And so all businesses with, a handful of employees and a dream and in many cases money. We're all making money here. But we didn't we always got in trouble with the rules and the permits and all the other stuff here. And we always got in trouble with bookkeeping because it was all in my head. And we always got in trouble with financial predictions and planning and whatnot here. All of that became difficult. Rod's here playing with our video right here and all that.
If you get in trouble, we can help you out. But the goal of the company is to make sure you don't get in trouble.
So yes.
We take care of all the basic and the necessary part to make sure that Uncle Sam stay out of your office.
Well, kind of in a weird way, kind of what we always tell people here at OC Talk Radio. What is OC Talk Radio? Like any radio station, we sell the time here. So we don't sell it to anybody who walks in the door. We try and have only certain business and community shows. We don't do people that are funny. We don't do music shows. We try and have a real production here. But we do charge, obviously, to produce the shows here. So people come in because, like Rod, wanted to produce a show on aging and whatnot. So we do these shows, usually for business purposes, and we always say, you get the guest, we do the rest. We do all the back-end stuff. We will engineer it. We'll produce it. We'll stream it. We'll store it. We'll teach you what to do with the content after you create it, how to put it in social media and YouTube and iTunes and all the other places. Same thing you're doing. You're teaching people how to get started. Here's the legal requirements. Here's the bookkeeping necessary to run your business. Here's the real estate. Here's the insurance. Here's all the things you need to do to get open and to stay open, right?
Yep, that's correct. And one of the best things that also we focus is helping the Hispanic community to find the American dream. The American dream for the Latino community is open their own business. It's not just getting the house. It's just open their business and get a successful financial industry here in the United
States. I hope this doesn't offend you, but can I be honest with you?
Go ahead.
I live in a world, we have mostly business shows here. They're mostly Republican types that come in here. I'm not. I think of myself as a reform Republican, as a liberal Republican. Well, there is no such thing anymore. And so many of my friends in conservative Republicans see Hispanics in particular and all immigrant groups, Muslims, Hispanics, any group, you name it, as somehow coming to take rather than to contribute. They're coming here to get on welfare. They're coming here to get benefits. They're coming here to get education. They're coming here to get something, and somehow we, the Americans that are here, are going to end up paying for this, and they're going to be a drain, they're going to be a drag, they're going to be we're the makers, they're the takers. I haven't seen that to be true, particularly in the Hispanic community. I don't see the Hispanic community struggling to come across the border and brave everything to get here and fight to get here just so they can get free hospital and free schools and free something.
That's correct. We're not here to take anybody's job. We're not here to take advantage of the system or get a free ride. So we're here to make sure this country also grow with us. We're here to help and to be part of the United States. And be part of the United States is make sure we create a new way to make money, like creating job, creating opportunity to grow in this beautiful country.
The majority of immigrants I've met here in Southern California, and I met quite a few, Indians opening up convenience stores, Egyptians opening up, Koreans opening up dry cleaners, Hispanics opening up restaurants or landscaping services, or there are certain categories that certain groups seem to migrate into because there's already a bunch of other people doing that from their community, and they sort of pioneer a field and they start doing. I work with a bunch of Cambodians that own donut shops. It turns out there's tons of Cambodians that own donut shops because once they do, they teach their other relatives. And the reason they do it is, one, because they want to work to make money. They would have stayed where they were had they not wanted more.
Let me interject, okay? Because this is a fallacy.
Yes,
That has historically in the United States been a fallacy that has targeted every
immigrant
most
group.
Recent immigrant yes. wave or population. Okay, I would say that probably with the Latino population, it isn't something that's the latest wave. It just seems to be a persistent thing that is a false nomer. But
I think it is the latest wave because when I came to California, when I lived in Michigan.
But it's not, Paul, because you have immigrants from Iraq. You have immigrants from stuff like that. When your predecessors, your immigrants from Ireland,
right.
Okay, they came over. If the Italians were here before, the Irish were discriminated against or vice versa,
right? We were first.
Right. So the point is this, okay? Whereas it usually gets passed on to the next new wave of immigrants from
right.
wherever they are, right?
Yeah.
You can't say that right now in Orange County there's still a overall discrimination against Cambodians, Asians, or not. That isn't on the target anymore. People
no, they came over in the 70s or
right,
whatever.
Right, but Latinos have been in the United States forever. I mean, I'm in San Clemente, which is
right.
considered, you know, boilerplate bastion of Republican, you know, conservatism, right? Which is, again, in its own right now a misnomer,
right?
But you have families there that in what they, you know, I think is ridiculous is referred to as sort of the barrio in San Clemente where homes are $700,000,
yeah.
right? Right?
Ocean View.
Ocean Views, where the families have been there for over 60 years.
Right.
Okay, this is not something that is a recent wave thing,
You're
but
right.
it is a persistent thing that is, I think, regionally, okay, is something that is insensitive because it is proximity to the border.
Right.
Okay, I would say that probably Texas has the same kind of biasness.
All the border communities.
Yeah, all border communities. And at the end of the day, I don't know about Irish or Italians, but I would assume it was the same. Most people that came from somewhere else, okay, do not have this thing about being taken care of.
No.
It's ingrained in the culture. It tends to be you take care of yourself and your family.
Well, particularly the ones who came. If you felt that way, then you wouldn't have braved all the elements and fought to get here. My relatives had to come over in what they called coffin ships, old slave ships that most of them died in the 1800s. And the only reason they left because there was a potato famine. They were starving.
Right. And you know what the most ironic thing is? Because you get this, and you were the one who brought it up, right?
Right.
You said Republicans and all
yeah.
this stuff, right? Okay. The funny thing is, most immigrants that come into the United States, let's keep off the conversation of legal or illegal, because that's a different conversation altogether. But let's say that everybody...
It's also an artificial distinction. Up until the 1960s or 40s or 30s, whenever they passed these immigration laws, you just got here, you were legal. Nobody asked my relatives when they got off the boat if they were legal enough.
Right.
They got off the boat, they were legal.
Cuban crisis, blah, blah. Okay.
Once they touched
but
the soil, they were
let's
here.
Just say that the ground is level on that particular aspect, okay?
Right.
The irony of all ironies, when it comes to the Republican Party, is that most people that come from other countries that are immigrants, when they register to vote, they tend to register Republican.
Because they're hard workers.
That's correct.
Correct?
Yes. Most of the Hispanics, they have their businesses, they are Republican.
Yes, they're fiscally conservative, socially somewhat liberal, because they've been maybe discriminated against, or they come from countries that are a little bit heavy-handed in how they manage the social component of aspect. But the craziest of all crazies, and I can speak for myself, when we came in and we immigrated, okay, and I became 18, I was a holder of a travel document, and then I became a citizen. I was eligible to vote. When I registered to vote, okay, a little wet behind the ears, 18-year-old, didn't know one side up or one side down, have never voted before in my life, right?
Right.
I registered Republican. That was the only designation I was ever with. And the craziest thing about this is now you sit there and you listen to this pompous self-righteousness, coming from that party. I know Carlos said to keep it easy today, but this is really an important thing. And I'll tell you why it's important, relevant to this conversation. Because it wasn't that long ago, okay, specifically the city where El Triunfo is located, in Santa Ana. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that long ago that in Santa Ana, the Republican Party actually had guards that showed up 30 years ago that were at polling places. Okay?
Sure.
And basically were trying to turn away people because they were not supposedly registered to vote. Okay? How things have changed where today 78% of the population in Santa Ana is Latino.
Right.
Yes.
Everybody on the city council is Latino.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Anaheim is following suit because of the ACLU thing, right? And people are saying Santa Ana is actually the face of New California.
So, let me just go back to the first point I made. I appreciate all that rant, and I agree with 99% of it.
So, I'm just saying that because we fall victim to this easy laziness.
But it starts
earlier
than that.
This is the thing, right? And we re-ingrain and repurpose and re-ingrain these stories that really have no basis. Most people, I'm going to say it very clearly, most people, be they Iraqis, Syrians, Lebanese, Middle Easterns, Afghanis, Cambodians, Latinos, most people that are coming from other countries where there is basically an overhanded, heavy, you don't have a lot of opportunities.
No opportunity.
When they come in, they are fiscally conservative, socially liberal. Now, second generation maybe gets a little bit more liberal, but the prime generation of immigrants, which we discriminate against and say, go back to your country, what are you doing here, you're here to take our jobs, that is all a lie.
Yes. And I just had this discussion the other day with one of our show hosts, who shall remain nameless, who's very successful Republican.
You're just afraid that I'm going to target him on Facebook?
Yes, exactly. And we were talking about this, and he said, all these immigrants come over, cost us money. They all take advantage of the free social network, and they end up being a drag rather than a gain. I said, you're completely wrong. I said, I wish we could do a study on that.
Yeah, I can give you one example.
All right, please.
Right now, everybody who is working and they don't have a social security, they have an ITIN number. That's a number that IRS gave all the international investor or people that they don't have a way to get a social security. They are contributing when they get a paycheck.
They're paying taxes.
They pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying their
but they'll never get back.
They'll never get back.
Like Social Security. You know?
Yes.
Well, what kind of taxes do they pay?
They pay the same taxes that we do.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And they get no benefits.
Correct. The Social Security and Medicare, they contribute every time they get a payroll check, they will contribute it to that. But they contribute to a fund that is nobody knows where they are and what is going to happen to them.
Oh, this money that's like nobody knows what's it's being used for?
Correct.
Interesting.
So... I heard that, and I agree with it, and people don't realize it. And here's another fact.
And is that, sorry, Paul, is that state of California or is that federal?
That's federal.
That's federal.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the other thing that I've seen from firsthand, having built lots of restaurants with Vietnamese Cambodians, having adopted a daughter from Mexico and who's now living in Santa Ana with her boyfriend, significant other, and his whole family and all those people that we interface with over there, here's what I've observed. It's just what you said. These people aren't coming here to free ride. they're coming here for the opportunity to make more of their life. And that means for most of them, because they don't have the educational or they don't have the language skills, they have to start a new job. As simple as an ice cream cart somewhere, or as sophisticated as a chain of restaurants or manufacturing or something else. The impulse is to create something else because they can't qualify for a traditional
job.
Well, I
don't have ingrained in my system that I depend on an entity outside of myself.
Yeah, I didn't do that in the other world.
Dependency may be family-oriented or extended family-oriented and support kind of system, but it does not mean that I'm going to go and try to milk the system. In fact, if you really want to be honest, mm-hmm. most people that are on welfare are white.
Yes. And that's
God, did I just say that too?
Most people on Medicaid for the poor and indigent aren't of color. They're white. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
There's an entrepreneurial spirit, okay? I mean, Carlos's business has just grown in the period that I have known him. It's grown crazy. And every time I walk in there, it's just more people that whether it's a grocery store, whether it's a large multi-unit situation.
Yeah.
It's a whole range of things. You can't even pigeonhole it to one kind of business, right?
That's correct. Because when they ask me, what is your niche? I say the niche is Hispanic small business owner.
Right.
And I cannot say just dentist or retail or restaurant because there is so many different industry. It can range from somebody selling ice cream all the way to somebody who's selling $30 million in candies, Mexican candies.
Yeah, right. So why then has this built up? And this isn't new. Every immigrant group faced it. When the Irish came over, they were lazy, they were drunk, they were worthless. There were signs up literally in the 1840s and 50s and 60s, no Irish allowed, get out of here. All these misconceptions. They're Catholics, so they're going to listen to the Pope. Recently, as John F. Kennedy had, when he ran for president.
Yeah, you can have him be a president. He's Catholic.
He's Catholic. He's going to go check with the Pope and everything. I mean, he literally had to go give a speech to the Southern Baptist Convention and say, I will not follow
the Pope.
Pope is not going to be on my hotline. This is the 1960s. So that's been a persistent problem. The first wave of immigrants were Irish. Then it was Southern Mediterranean, Italians and Greeks and other. Then it was Eastern European, my other half, when they came over in the early 1900s and were discriminated against. Then we started seeing large waves of Vietnamese fleeing the problems there and Cambodians and stuff.
I'll tell you why it is. I'll tell you very simply why it is.
Why?
Because you as a human being have a DNA ingrained into you to be afraid of what you don't know. And we do not promote. Canada is better at this, although I think it's human nature to assume a certain bias,
right,
internal to yourself and your kind, your ilk, or outside of you, right? But I think what you do not know,
you fear,
and when we basically where we fail as a society is where opportunities are there to cross over and embrace the diversity,
right,
and introduce that diversity to a younger generation. Okay.
Yep.
And we purposely step and stand in the front, in the way of that. That is where we fail as a society. Then again, it's out of fear. And I think, we look at the political landscape right now, Paul, and you and I have had this conversation, right?
Yeah.
We are trying to hold on to this nostalgic 1950s right now of everything being in order.
Which never existed anyway.
I understand, but of everything being in
order. Leave it to Beaver.
Everything being neat. Everything being in a small, tidy little box that I can put on a shelf, right?
Everything being white.
Okay, I mean, I've got an accountant tax preparer in front of me, and, he lives in everything being in a nice little box and tidy and put in its place. I understand that. But world and life is not like that. Mm-hmm. Right, the diversity that we have in the United States, in California,
as if there were in 1950s when I grew up and watched Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best, or any of these shows, or Mayberry, there were no Hispanics, there were no African Americans, there were certainly no Muslims, there were certainly no gays.
Right.
It's like somehow these people just got. We didn't have any of them back then, and life was so wonderful. That's a fantasy,
of course.
It's a fantasy.
People hid them. There was embarrassment and shame.
And life wasn't so wonderful back then. We also had high taxes. We had high unemployment. We had high hate crimes. We had all sorts of things that I wouldn't want to go back to.
So let's talk about this on another level for a minute, because I think what we've established is Latino population or emerging immigrant populations in general, okay, are mislabeled. when it comes to
as
that,
takers,
right?
And not
as
makers.
Takers and not givers or makers. Contributors, makers, right? That's actually opposite.
That's what Romney said. You know, we're back to two tiers. There's the makers, which ain't the immigrants, and there's the takers.
Right. So that, let's just put that aside, because for the purpose of this show, that's, we don't believe that. That's baloney, right? Anybody who cares to prove me wrong.
Come on.
Come on. OCTalkRadio.net. We're online right now. What's the telephone number, Paul?
949-330-7761. Okay. Operator standing
Even
by.
If one person is out there listening to us today, right? But, I mean, call us. If you can prove to me that this is, in fact, the case, that it's an issue of takers, and you can prove it, not just based on a pre-existing bias or a hypothetical I hear or some soundbite you picked up from somewhere or the other, right?
Right.
Where's the proof? Right.
We also have people that are watching us live right now.
Yeah.
On El Triunfo Corp Facebook, and also they are on my personal page and your page.
I don't know if it's feeding on mine, but are we feeding on Rad Life?
Let's get that.
Okay. Anyway, we're on Facebook right now. It's at Carlos's page. Anybody who has any questions, you can ask us. We'll try to answer them. But this is one of those things that I've lived in California since '85. I've lived in Orange County probably since '87, and it blows my mind that we still actually are so myopic that we talk about
so
stuff
fearful of immigrants.
Out of fear. We really operate out of fear. Okay, the truth is that immigrants are actually very much contributing members of society. In some cases, like Carlos said, they're contributing even down to taxes that they don't even get to benefit from. Right, because everybody who's getting paid, some money is set aside from their payroll.
Correct.
That's getting paid into taxes.
Yep.
Right. Also, the statistics say that one of the largest groups of new business owners are Latinos and Asians.
Yep. There is about
in the United States.
Yeah, there is about 4,000 new DBAs that get registered in Orange County, clear recorded every month.
How many?
4,000
every month.
Every month, and those 4,000, about 20% are Latinos business owners.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
It is a huge number of new businesses created in Orange County.
Wow. So let me ask you this, because I'm curious. How much is there? Is that, like they say, that one of the largest group of new business owners or owners or companies that are starting startups is women? Do you have that same thing in the Latino community?
Yes. I have one specific client. She's getting to the fifth restaurant, and also she's getting a new ice cream place called La Michoacana in Garden Grove.
So six businesses, basically.
Yes, but one female owner.
And how long has she been an owner of, like,
about
when did she start?
9 years.
So with a period of 10 years,
yep.
This lady is a minority female business owner of six locations.
Correct.
Wow.
And okay. Every location has a minimum 15 employees.
Wow. So that's there's your job creation, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you don't have to find any different ways. Just help a small business to open and have everything in right order.
Right.
They will create new job opportunities.
Right, which is what you basically do, and you grow with your client, basically, as your client has grown, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's one. The other thing is that, and we talk about this on the show because of the aging component, is that if anything, I would think that immigrant populations or minority populations maybe have a more extended family structure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, pretty much they are a family-owned business.
Right.
Yeah, there is the husband, the wife, and the kids working for them.
Okay, so that's the business side of it, right?
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about this because, again, we're talking about a population that's growing. We're talking about, I think the last census is it was projected as 40% of the population in California was Latino.
Yes.
By 2050, the projection is 47% of the population. It's almost 50% of the population of the state of California, right?
Correct.
Of those people, the majority, just by virtue of their family dynamics, their lifestyle choices, what have you, whether it be business or not, they're multi-generational.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Now, in the last recession, a lot of these families were impacted badly, like everybody else.
Yeah.
But maybe even a little bit more because their primary asset was their home.
Yeah, that's correct.
Right? And when you say home, you're not talking about maybe a single person and their kids. There may be a mother or a father. It's a multi-generational household.
Yes.
Right? So that's where you have seniors now and from the Latino community.
Yeah.
Right? So how is it today that those particular demographics in the minority, in Latino, let's talk about Latino population, okay, are cared for? Where do they get the support that they need outside of the family?
When they retire.
When they retire.
That's probably one of the biggest fear on the Latino community is when they get retired. Do they have the money to retire, or who's going to take care of them? Right now, what we're seeing is they're not saving enough money. Or if they're saving the money, they're saying putting under the mattress.
Mm.
And that's a
literally under the mattress.
Yes.
When I dealt with Cambodians and Vietnamese, I'd say, "Well, you don't mean under the mattress." They said, "Oh no, that's how we got it."
So why? Carlos, why is that?
Because when they, wherever the country they came from, they don't believe in bank,
exactly.
or they don't believe in the banking system itself,
right?
Because
it was corrupt. That's
yes.
they lost the money,
or the bank disappeared, or a lot of those bank owners from Ecuador. I'm original from there, and they are in Miami. They're living their life. They have their beautiful condos at the Ocean View, and they took all the money.
Embezzled the money from
yes.
people.
Yeah, so that's why they don't believe
in banks.
Hear
that all the time.
Yeah.
So even more, another proof yet, that in most cases, immigrants have a distrust of infrastructure
yes.
supporting them.
Correct.
So that taking that we keep talking about is once again even more reason that people are unlikely to go there.
And they also have a culture that values the older people, like Asians particularly, and Hispanic communities, where they don't just throw their old people out and stick them in a home like we've talked about endlessly we do here.
Well, right, yeah. But what I'm also hearing is a parallel to a lot of people that we've had on the show, where, you know, the number one fear for seniors in the United States is, am I going to outlive my savings?
Right. So that's one of the goals of the company, too, is to help them make sure they put their money aside with doing it with a tax strategy and also a financial strategy to save money for retirement. And we are teaching them that it's okay to trust the bank system in the United States, and also it's okay to save money for retirement, and also with life insurance. Because sometimes when you're talking about life insurance for a Hispanic
right.
client, they will say, you're talking about the debt. I don't want to die now.
Yeah.
So that was how we had to explain and teach them.
And what you're saying is there are parallels. So let's talk about me.
Yeah,
I'm always the
parallels.
Guinea pig here.
Yeah.
I don't have life insurance.
This show's really all about Paul.
I don't have I'm in my 60s. I have no life insurance. I have no will. I have very little savings other than what I inherit. I got lucky and inherited a little bit of money here.
But Rad will support you.
Rad will support me. I'm hoping for
that's
that.
That's what it feels like sometimes.
I don't have all the same fears that you talk about. Lucky me, I'm going to live to be 100. How the heck am I going to pay for that? I don't have... So here I am, a successful serial entrepreneur, and I still suffer from the same fears and failings.
And by the way, you're in a great spot for somebody. I mean, you're sitting here with how many shows?
20.
You got 20 shows.
22.
That people are paying you for airtime.
Right.
You got a fledgling business that has grown, I would say, right?
5 years, yeah.
In over 5 years. Right? I mean, that's pretty impressive,
yeah.
right? You started this business 5 years ago. You got 20 shows.
I had two people when I started, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're in a very good spot.
Mm-hmm.
Most people at 62 are basically going, I need an opportunity. I can't find an opportunity.
Yes.
And I didn't save. You got almost like a second chance.
Not almost. Right, I did get a second chance at life here.
What, third? What, fourth?
Or fourth or third, yeah, right. Yeah.
But what I'm saying,
it wasn't just the second chance.
What I'm saying is, you're doing something you're passionate about.
Yes.
You're doing something that you feel connected to.
Yes.
You could see yourself doing
it. I'm doing something that I feel is innovative and cutting edge that I didn't think I'd get a chance to do. That's supposed to be just for the young.
Yeah.
I'm doing something that feels like it's new, that feels like it's revolutionary and change the world.
You could see yourself doing this endlessly, really, right?
Yeah.
Like 10 years at least, easily,
at least,
right?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and probably more. And that's the same thing that is happening with the Hispanic business owner. They're finding a way, or they're finding their cultural niche that they need to support the services. One of the biggest examples is that Norgay grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
They have, I think, more than 40. I have the pleasure to be part of the seminar last week, and the owner was talking about how he started his business with $250.
Wow.
And now he has 40 stores.
Yes, in Southern California. There are 13 brothers, and they're making a killer. But they're helping the Hispanic
community. Can you support another theory that I hear all the time? We've had, not on this show, but on other shows, we've talked about the power of marketing to immigrant niches here in the country. For example, if I know this is an ugly subject, people, so many people are scared of Muslims and everything here.
Oh, why stop now?
But if you want to create food products that meet their dietary restrictions, that has been a huge growth in companies creating food services for Muslim communities, just as there has been for Hasidic Jews or whatnot that need to be kosher. There is a huge, huge opportunity for other niches that, like quinceañeras and other areas that are very popular and powerful within the Hispanic community. And there are people that are now entering this, most of which come from that immigrant community, because most of the people don't know about it or don't think they can get into it. And here's the thing I keep hearing. Most immigrants are also cash-oriented. They
yes.
are buying, when they buy a house, they buy a house.
Yep.
When they buy a business, they buy the business. They're not financing, they're not coming in like I did or we did, and we're borrowing nine-tenths of it here and hoping to make
Actually, society in the United States encourages you to be in debt.
Yes.
Yes.
And you're
easy credit, easy borrowing, all this stuff here. So when so many...
So it encourages you to be a taker.
A taker, yeah. Yeah. So if you want to create a lot of small businesses,
and then when you take, we blame you.
Yeah. So and they have tremendous buying power. They have tremendous cash they've accumulated because they're literally savers.
Yeah.
Which we as Americans, mainstream Americans, are not anymore. They're buying these businesses for cash, so they're fully funded. So they're the risk of failure is much lower. They're more stable businesses. They put every dollar back into it. They don't go out and spend frivolously and live wildly for the most part.
Yeah.
They reinvest the money, and so they end up turn one into two into four into 20. All the things that we supposedly admire in the American dream are in the immigrant community right now, and yet we're vilifying them.
I would argue that the American dream is a result of the immigrant experience.
Well, it is, yeah. It was based on the immigrant
experience. That if you did not have the immigrant experience, you would not have what we term the American dream.
Can I give you my – I'm sorry we're not letting Carlos talk much here, but here's my other take on this. I always say to people
– Go ahead.
That the American dream is built on immigrants. And the minute you stop immigration, you stop the – what makes us exceptional is the amount of people we take in from around the world and amalgamate and melt into one group of people. And that what makes us American is not the color of our skin or the language we speak, but it's the belief system we have. We're the only country in the world – if you believe in freedom, opportunity, and liberty, equality – if you believe that we're all equal and we're all free and we all have an opportunity, you're part of the club. Come on in.
Yeah.
And anybody can be an American. It's
yes.
not based on tribe. It's not based on religion. It's not based on ethnicity.
Actually, I don't know if you agree with me, Carlos, but I mean, that is the promotional campaign. That's the PR campaign that we pitch to everybody else.
Yeah, yep. Come.
Yep.
Because we say,
you too
we,
can be an American.
This is what we stand for. And everybody goes, wow, okay, I'm not experiencing freedom where I am. There's a junta or whatever in power.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I don't have opportunities because it's a closed circle and I can't do that. I mean, and by the way, it's not just like Central America or South America to the United
Everywhere.
States. You have the Poles, okay, the Hungarians. They went to the UK. They took on construction jobs. Did the exact same situation because of exactly the same dynamics.
That was the promise of the EU when they did we'll all be one big group. And if you work hard, there's an opportunity because we're all equal. We all start from the same place. And there's a freedom to do as much as you want, as hard as you can work. And there are a group of people everywhere in the world that respond to that message and flock to it. And then when they do, they say, oh, but we didn't want you all to come here.
You're going to say something.
Yeah, you want to hear something that really changed my mind.
Please.
The United States is open to do business with a business outside the United States. They say you are more than welcome to come if you want to invest money to open your business.
Yes.
But if you're coming here illegal to receive benefits, but things that you're not going to get, you're not welcome.
Okay.
So you can get investor visa. It is
H1, yeah.
And also the E2, and it is amazing.
You put $500,000 in, you're an American, yeah.
Yeah, resident, and right. you can also, instead of coming the legal way, you can have somebody either from Mexico or anybody who has a relationship with the United States coming here with the whole family, open their business, and they don't have to go through the whole trouble of getting the documents or trying to find a way to
become. Because you have a connection here.
Yeah. So you just invest the money in the United States. You are more than welcome. They give you a driver's license, Social Security, and you are here in the United States.
So if you're desperately poor and you fight to get here, get out. But if you got enough money, welcome.
Yes.
We can buy your way in.
Exactly.
But we want to stand for the...
Equality.
No, but we want to stand for integrity.
Yeah.
Right? In what we say we stand for. But if your price is right...
That goes out the window.
Here's your paperwork, right?
Yeah,
but I will say this, okay? We're picking on the United States a little bit unfairly. This is the same situation everywhere.
Oh,
okay?
It's still the best country in the world.
It's who you know. It's what you're willing to bring in, all of this stuff. And if you can prove I'm going to contribute X versus say I'm going to come in, I'm going to basically take whatever I have and bring it with me, and I'm going to build a business, and my goal is in 10 years I'm going to have 6 restaurants, somebody's going to go, yeah, but this guy's going to give me $500,000. So you know, yes, right? So I think the sad thing about this is when I don't know that it's ever going to change, okay? I think there's an aspect of human nature that you're always going to find somebody that's going to be, you know, the reason why you are not able to do something. You're going to try to point the finger outside of yourself versus be...
The reason my life sucks is because of them.
There's that personal accountability is a very fleeting... Yeah.
And thing. There is, I'm sorry to say, I experienced this too in California, feeling like I got mine, now everybody else leave. We don't need any more people moving to California. We don't need any more cars on the road. We don't need any more, and not just immigrants, anybody. I don't want them coming from Michigan, where I came from.
But the same people that are saying that, Paul, are the ones pushing for multi-level high-rise buildings in coastal California.
Yeah.
Okay? Because they want everybody to basically live now in condos in a high-rise.
I got my home.
But it doesn't make any sense. If you're saying, I got mine, you can't have yours.
Right.
Then why are you investing in buildings that are basically a multi-stories of living?
Because they want their money.
They want the money.
And the other thing is
to move into those. Somebody has to buy those, you know.
It's the same thing with young people. You know, I got mine, and I don't care about the young people if they're going to get theirs.
So what do you see? What do you see, Carlos? Because, I mean, how long have you been in business?
How long have you been in this country?
In this country, I'm moving in back in 1998.
Okay. And how did you come here and why?
I came here for the same reason like millions and millions of other people, to learn something new and to progress in life. I moved into United States. I went first to New York. New York seems to be something like a main place to go for people from Ecuador.
Mm-hmm.
The first stop. I spent there a couple months until my uncle invited me here to California to have a family event. And I came here in around March. The weather was totally different than New York,
right.
And the New York wasn't like the pictures or the movies. So.
And how did you qualify to get here? Did you wait in line? Did you just
I came
in
with a visa.
You came with a visa.
I came with a visa with the main focus was to study. I trying to become an architect, but when I say everything was already constructed here, mm-hmm. but I say, how come I do the architect, but I'm in business? So mm-hmm. create new business ideas and help people to grow their business.
And how hard was it to get a visa in 1998 from Ecuador? Because as I understand the visa program,
right?
It's not that easy, but I think I have a good wife and I got lucky and I got selected.
And you had a family here, so that you have to have some connection or something?
Yes, that was back in Guayaquil, that's the main city, and I got selected, and I got my visa, and I was able to come here. And then I like California. I go back to New York, spend a couple more months over there. In summer, my uncle gave me an opportunity to move in with him, and he owns a real estate company, insurance, financial services, everything related to real estate. And I worked with him for about 10 years. In those 10 years, I decided to study. I finished my AA in business administration. Then I continued with economics, and I moved into College of Fullerton, and I got my bachelor in corporate finance, personal finance, and business administration, We're also concentration and accounting. I was studying like crazy those days. Where people buying houses and selling, I was studying it. Then I went to UCI. I got my personal financial planning certificate, and I decided to continue my master in accounting in Kaplan University. I did it at the online version since that was the new trend, getting online, and it was, I think, more complicated to study.
And you
online.
Just proved another point. There's an assumption that so many immigrants are illiterate, uneducated, and unwilling to do anything to change, that they come here starving and desperate, and we're somehow going to take care of them and feed them. And what I hear over and over again is the opposite. No, you give me the opportunity, and I'll go get more education than the rest of you are getting. I'll work harder than the rest of you are doing.
Yes, that's exactly what I did. I have so many degrees, it's on Rad makes fun of my walls.
No, actually, it was nice to do his offices because I didn't have to worry about what artwork to put on his wall. He had enough degrees to basically cover the wall. I think we have actually a couple we still need to find a place for.
Right.
And same with you, Red. I know you weren't born here and you came here later in life, and you've not only got a bachelor's degree and all this other stuff, some pretty prestigious sounding pieces of paper, but you went back and got a master's and you went and got other certifications. And
he just doesn't want to say I went to school in Switzerland.
Well, that sounds elitist here.
But, but you know, you're absolutely correct. And I think this is the thing that's really funny. I can speak for myself. I never, in my head, I mean, you depend on your family, okay?
Sure.
You have a sense of
very strong
of both the family is there for you and you are there for your family, and during the course of your life, that responsibility dynamic shifts as your parents get older,
yes,
as you have siblings, you know, things like that. But basically, that's your support system.
Right.
That's your resource,
right?
Okay, that's the one thing you can count on. You never count on. I was born in Baghdad. I grew up in Kuwait and Abu Dhabi. I was never a citizen in any of those countries, so there wasn't, you know, like
an
I could basically tap into.
You
like,
are the citizen of the world.
I mean, really? Okay. Right. I mean, I've shared this with both of you. When I got here in '85, I had like a crisis of identity because it's like I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere.
Yeah.
At that point, I had lived in about four or five countries and three continents. I mean, it's like so. And then I then wake up one morning and I go, absolutely. I actually kind of belong everywhere, right? But the thing about it is the only thing you took with you, the only thing you knew you could depend and tap into was that extended family structure, okay? And in some cases, it wasn't even easy because it crossed borders and time zones. I mean, it wasn't like everybody traveled together like in this little clan,
right?
But that's the only thing. Other than that, you knew ingrained into you when you were from an early age by your parents, if you're lucky, in some cases, you may be first generation going to college. It happens at the Council at Long Beach every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay? Here in this country.
I was first generation going to college.
And the dynamics that come with that, whether the value of an education or not. But I was fortunate enough that my parents, basically, the value of education, that is the thing that you can count on.
I hear that in so many immigrants, though,
they
value that education.
Exactly. You know, I have a lot of friends of mine. I know some of them that were basically Korean. Their parents may have actually had an educated background and came to the United States from Korea as immigrants, and they basically owned a couple of liquor stores, some grocery stores, whatever, and they made sure that all that money, all that resources went into their kids going to college,
exactly.
And their kids basically went to the likes of Princeton or, you know, like high-end, and they achieved a lot. But the point is that it ingrained into you is that sense of self-dependency.
So why are we so afraid of the next wave of Syrian immigrants? Why are we so afraid of the continuing influx of Hispanics?
You want me honestly to tell you this?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you why. We're afraid because it makes us have to work harder. We are afraid because we can't get away with just doing what we have done. Okay, it's like
hungrier and wants more.
Yes, exactly. It's like being a star player on a team, and then all of a sudden you're getting a little older. Okay, and some young buck comes in who is basically like hungry for the opportunity, and they go above and beyond.
Yes.
You have an option. You either basically accept that and embrace it and recognize their efforts and, you know, celebrate it, or you feel threatened by it and basically either you do the work, which you might be within your ability to do or not.
Right.
You do the work to excel and compete. Or you basically get grumpy in the corner and basically say, oh, my God, I can't believe this person has taken my striker position. I'm sitting on the bench now. I don't get to play on the field at all.
And you don't like the new guy.
And I don't like the new guy now because of
that.
And
for most of my friends listening, Michigan.
But he's a nice guy. You know, he goes to church on Sundays. You know, he takes care of his grandma. I don't care. He's not, oh, you know, everything was so great before he showed up. This is why. I mean, let's call it like it is. Okay, you can dress it up with friggin' ban on this or no on that or God knows what on this. The bottom line is personal fear that you have to work harder today because there's somebody new on the, in the field that is going to give you a run for your money.
So for all my friends in Michigan, the few who may be tuning into this on the internet, who
I probably lost a lot of friends
who
saying,
rant and rave about all the immigrants coming here and how they're ruining this country and forget that we all came from immigrant stock and we all were those immigrants 2-3 generations ago here. I certainly was.
Unless you're a Native American with a feather in your head, you're an immigrant.
Right. So here's the story I always heard.
Sorry, Native Americans, but that's, you know. Just
and I'll share this, and then we'll go to break, and I'll extend this till another 30 minutes because I think this is an important topic, and we haven't given Carlos a much chance to talk here.
Yeah.
All right. Here's my story before the break. I come to California. I come to Orange County, and I fall into – I do public relations and other things, and part of that is I built a bar by accident. And
an Irishman who built a bar.
Irishman, big surprise. And suddenly I was a hot commodity in Hispanic and in Asian communities because they all wanted to build bars, and they didn't know how to get the permits. They didn't know how to get the conditional use permit and the liquor license, and I knew how to do that. I'd done it. So they start coming to me saying, well, I'll pay you. And I turned it into for about a five-year business where I opened probably 20 or 30 liquor stores, restaurants, bars, all that stuff for all immigrants.
What do you think, Carlos? Nice. Should we bring him along as a consultant?
I did.
Yes, I think so.
And I every so often still do that, but I did that for a long time, and I got paid well to go and get the conditional use permit and the liquor license, okay, yeah. And the health department sometimes. Okay. So I did one for a Cambodian group, a bunch of young kids. Actually, I built several bars, actually, and I sold a couple of them. And one of them I sold to these Cambodian kids, and they came in and looked like they had no money in a beat-up car in a sack of paper, and they paid me whatever it was, $200,000 for this little tiny bar. And I thought, I'll never hear from them again. And then they came back a little while later and said, you got another one?
Hmm.
I said, another one? You beat me up on the price, and you act like you had no money? Oh, no, we got money. How do you have money? Well, there's like 50 of us, and we all pool this money into a big pot, and we buy bars, and they own donut stores. They owned like 50 donut stores. So I built another one and sold it to them. I built another one, and over time...
And you know, those who basically have a bone to pick with immigrants would say to that?
What?
You know, that's exactly what's ruining the system. It's all these people basically just, you know...
Pulling their money
not
together.
Letting anybody else in, and just supporting each other, and pulling this money. Oh, man, I can't stand it. I mean, I can't compete with that. How am I supposed
And on the negative side, they would always beat me up
I'm
and say,
sarcastic and facetious.
This is all the money they had. There was always drive a hard bargain.
That's one of the best sales techniques.
Oh, my God. I got no money. I'm broke. And this is the last one you'll ever see me. And make me a deal. And please. And finally,
until the next one.
Until the next one. Exactly.
Right.
So finally,
well, because the first one I saved money on and I made money on. So that, you know what I mean?
So finally, I did this trick.
How do you think people who are rich have money in their pockets,
yeah, exactly.
Right? Because they spend it? No.
So here's the rest of the story. So finally, we did about 3 or 4 of these. And I'm sitting after I sold the third one to them, and they looked at me and they said, where do you think we're getting the money, really? And I said, you know, I know you're from Cambodia. I really don't want to know. And they laughed. They said, you think it's drugs, don't you? I said, well, you tell me you grew up and where all the drugs come from here, and now all of a sudden there's money when there has to be every time, and it's all cash. And so finally they said, here's our story. They had grown up in Cambodia, and they were part of the middle class or the upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as we remember back to our history in the 70s, Khmer Rouge came in, the crazy extremist
Rouge, yeah.
Communist, and literally drove into the city and bayonet, point of a gun, said, everybody out of your house, go into this thing, start digging. Digging for what? I'm a shop owner. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. Go out and dig. And he vividly recalled, he was like a little kid when this happened, and he said the kids would start crying, and they would walk up and down the line, and they'd start blowing little kids' heads off. Boom. Anybody else want to cry? Boom. Anybody else want to cry? Until we stopped crying. And he said, we would get up at dawn and go out and dig all day long until dark, and we'd get a bowl of rice.
Mm-hmm.
We finally escaped because we had hidden some gold. That's why gold is precious to them. We had the money in the bank got taken. We had some gold. We bribed the guards. We came to America, and all we couldn't speak their language, so we collected boxes, and that's how we saved money. And we took that money and put it in a giant pool and eventually bought a little business because we couldn't speak English. We couldn't get a job anywhere here, and eventually we saved money that, and we worked 20. He said, so here's the story. He said, You think we're crazy because we work 23 out of every 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We don't take vacations. We live poorly. We pool our money, and it's just to buy another business to buy another business. I said, yeah, you sound like ants. I said, you don't enjoy any of it. It's just work, 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 24 hours a day.
You know who they sound like, too? They sound like the Irish and the Italians.
Well, yeah. So here's the part that struck me, and we'll go to the commercial after this. He said, you know what? We think you're crazy. Because in our country, we worked 20 hours a day for a bowl of rice. And now we come here and we get a Mercedes and we get three businesses. We feel like there's gold laying all over the streets and you're too lazy to reach over and pick it up.
Yes. One thing that I say to my clients, we don't have to make the money. We only have to collect it.
Because it's there.
We are not the Federal Reserve, so we cannot make the money. So the money's already done for us. So it just a matter of collecting, find a new service or a new product, and then we're going to make it happen.
There you go.
Well, and anybody, I mean, I'll stop with this before we take the break, because I want to come back and really talk about sort of where are we going as a country and where are we going as a state, and typical saying, you know, as goes California, so goes the
nation.
The nation,
right.
Is, you know, you're talking about a state that will be 47% Latino.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, that is not a niche market, people.
Yeah, right.
Half the population is not a niche market.
This isn't just today's trend.
And then when you're looking at all the building that's happening for multi-generational homes in Irvine that is basically targeting Chinese money.
Oh.
Okay. You got to get your head out of that proverbial, you know, it's either white or it's not right, okay, and look at the reality of life that you're living. And this is not limited to California. We may be in the forefront of this, but this trend is not limited.
Texas, Arizona,
I saw over a course of 10 years, I saw a generation, a demographic shift in the Midwest.
Yes,
right?
I did too.
With Latinos.
Yeah.
Right? And same thing in the South, in Atlanta, and places of that nature. And at the end of the day, it's the immigrant population tends to be very industrious, very hardworking,
yes,
very contributing, and to be honest,
very law and order.
Willing to do jobs that most other people are not willing to
do. And to work
do.
Harder at it than any of us can imagine.
Right. So let's go to the break and come back.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
All right, we're back here. So I just want to say one thing.
193 views.
Wow.
On that video.
Yeah. Can you hear it or not?
Yeah, but I haven't.
We're back.
Let me
make one statement, and Rod's going to add to it, and then we're going to try and shut up and let
Carlos. Are we
back? Yes, and then we're going to let Carlos tell stories. Yes.
I told you to give me a warning that
I didn't.
We're back.
No warning.
Just in case I'm basically, you know, lambasting somebody.
Here's the summary as we were offline. I said, you know, I'm embarrassed. I'm a 60-year-old white male. I'm the classic person who voted for Trump. I didn't vote for Trump, but I'm the profile of the people who voted for Trump. And all my friends in the Midwest, all of them voted for Trump. And they all think I'm crazy. I'm the outlier.
I have one word that defines you.
No, wait a second. Let me give the word in a second. I said, so I'm embarrassed because we've all forgotten that we are the immigrants. We were two, three generations ago the Hispanics of today, or the Asians, or the Muslims of today. We were the outcasts. We were the unwanted. And we were the ones that worked harder than everybody else. And we were the ones that wanted harder than everybody else. And we were the ones that built the small businesses and worked our way up. And now, three generations later, we say, no more. So that is so embarrassing to me because I completely believe that America is exceptional, and it's because of immigrants. The fact that we accept them and assimilate them, and it constantly gives us new ideas, new blood, new energy, new enthusiasm, new money, new markets, new everything here. And why we every so often go through this wave of revulsion and say no more, I don't know. Rod has a name for it.
What? Yeah, you're a NIMBY. you're a not in my backyard.
Okay. I got mine. That's the end of it. Now go home. I got mine. Now everybody else go home.
Yeah. You know. So how many did you count back? How many generations were you immigrant?
I'm third generation. So,
you're a third generation immigrant.
My great-grandfather came from Ireland.
So let me ask you something. What would your grandfather say
today,
if he heard you today, not you, but I'm just using it as an example, okay, had heard you have those biases towards an immigrant population? I'm just curious because, I mean, maybe by the time your dad came around, that was already starting to, like, protect my own circle the wagons kind of thing.
Yeah.
With your grandfather, the person who actually...
My great-grandfather.
What do you think he would say?
You know what? I'm sorry to say this. He probably would have been the first in line to say, attaboy, keep him out. Because he did everything he could to pretend he wasn't an immigrant, to hide the fact he was an immigrant. He was embarrassed he was an immigrant. And so I hear this many people, they hide their immigrant status to try and meld in and blend in as quickly as they could. They changed their names. They tried to concoct stories. They did everything they could. They were embarrassed by the fact that they were recent immigrants.
Okay, so again, I think that in itself is also a common story.
Yeah.
Right? There are people,
I don't know if that's still the case.
There are people, I don't know about the Latino community per se, but I mean, I want you to answer that for me in a minute. But I know in some cases with some Asian communities where people who came, they actually have a really negative reaction for their kids not speaking English. Like, they insist that the only language you should speak is English.
Yes.
And so and the Arabic population to a certain extent, or the Middle Eastern population to a certain extent similar, where you have one generation later, that generation has lost the language.
My friend Mark, if he's listening, who is radically for
Trump. I don't think it's
Trump,
the same with the Latino population, but yeah.
He's radically for Trump. He radically hates immigrants. He rails against them all the time. He knows how angry it makes me. And I say, but your grandfather was from Holland. And when your grandfather came here, you told me many times that he could never master English. He could hardly speak it. But he would tell the kids, you, Mark, that we will not, we are Americans, we only speak English. He would not accept it. We're here, and we're going to make the best of it. And,
yep.
and we're not going back.
So again, a similar immigrant experience, right?
Yeah, for the education right now with the Hispanic community, there are schools now in Santa Ana. Actually, my daughter goes to that school called El Sol. They speak both languages. They start
bilingual.
Yeah, bilingual. They start 80-20.
Dual immersion.
Yeah.
I think they call
yes.
It, right?
Yes. Yeah. But now it's not only in that specific school. It's a testing school district also is going to that way too. They're explaining that there is it's a good way to speak two languages.
So let me show you the insanity of some of our thinking sometimes as a society. Okay, we are we rebel against dual immersion between English and Spanish, and when we want to put out bilingual pieces of paper with the same information,
angry,
it's English. You got to speak, learn how to speak English. But when you say dual immersion with Mandarin, everybody goes, oh, yeah, you know, because that's China is the new market, and that's where you gotta learn how Chinese. Oh, you know, you're going to UCI, you're going to get a master's degree. Oh, you're going to go on a trip to China, right? I mean,
and when you go,
and we'd like champion that. You should get Chinese.
And
you're
when you,
right.
And when you go through the classical...
you got a population that's 50% of the state as a marketplace, and you're not encouraging people to speak Spanish. What is wrong with this picture?
I'll go worse than that. If you go to the classical college education model, which is still in effect in most colleges, first thing you have to do is get another language.
Yeah. And guess
French,
what?
German...
You had to do that.
Yeah, I had to do
that. I had to do that overseas.
But guess what? I studied Spanish.
Did you?
Yes. That was an easy A.
So, and because one of the things I learned this...
That's pretty funny.
When I adopted a girl from Mexico, everybody knows I have an immigrant daughter. She came here illegally. We found her in foster care, and we took her in. She's my daughter, okay? And she didn't speak English very well, and I sure don't speak Spanish. And I was concerned about her learning English, because I know this is an English-speaking country, and that you got to have mastered that to make it here. But what I learned along the way is the fact that she spoke another language wasn't a detriment, but it was a good thing, because it made her more creative. She could see that there was more than one answer to every question. There were two words to describe everything, or more than two words.
If we hadn't learned English... Okay, like overseas, learning English is the back in the day was the equivalent of learning Mandarin. It was right. Your way to better opportunity. It right. was your way to be able to communicate beyond your borders. Okay, if you were a tour guide during the days of Thomas Cook and Egypt and Orientalism, okay, in the 1800s, if you're a tour guide that happened to be a native that spoke English, okay, oh my God, your business just doubled.
Yep.
Okay, I mean, this lunacy that we shouldn't be teaching people other languages. Okay, instead of insisting that they pick them up, including in public school system,
right?
And then to add into insanity of the fact of being in a state that is 50% by 2050 going to be Latino,
right?
And basically somehow burying your head in the sand and saying no, no, no to dual immersion, you are cutting the opportunities of your kids in half.
Yeah, let me tell you one thing that the city of Santa Ana just released this week. They're paying around $2,000 more to a police officer who speaks Spanish.
Wow.
That's
an that.
Extra $2,000.
Well, when you have 78% of the yeah. population Latino.
But let me play devil's advocate, because my friends would maybe say.
And actually, I know a lot of people that are in the police department yeah. in Santa Ana that were, or maybe they were, that don't have that.
Yeah.
So somebody who has that's an advantage.
So yeah, let exactly. me give you another story. Okay, this one's from my
grandfather. I hate that. If you know Spanish, then you have a disadvantage over somebody who doesn't know Spanish. What kind of country is this? Isn't this America? We're supposed to be.
But here's the
how do we reward that?
Here's the counter argument, and here's the craziness of the counter argument. Okay, so my father, his grandmother was from Poland. Okay, she came here in 1900. She died in 1970. She lived in a Polish-speaking community in Detroit, Polish newspaper, Polish mass, Polish radio station, everything. She never learned to speak English. When I knew her as a little kid, she only spoke Polish, and I didn't speak Polish, and she didn't speak English, so we used to just point and laugh at each other. All right, so my dad, to his dying day a couple of years ago, would rail against...
But that never had the discriminatory tone.
That's what I'm going to get at. So my father would rail against Mexicans that don't learn English. Or Asians that don't learn English. It's an English-speaking country. Forget your language. Learn this one. And I'd say, but your grandmother never did.
Yeah.
Well, that was different. No, it wasn't.
Right.
It's the same thing. So their argument would say, if it's 40% Hispanic, who cares? They're all going to have to learn English. And the fact that they don't means they don't assimilate. We don't want them. They're not welcome, blah, blah, blah. But here's the other interesting fact that I've seen. I learned this through my daughter's experience. The first wave that comes over of any immigrant group struggles to learn English. Mm-hmm. It's a hard language. Mm-hmm. One of the hardest in the world. Second group speaks both, because they have to speak their parents and they have to speak in the country that
right.
they live in. By the third generation, most groups, I'm sorry folks, even the Hispanics, are going to stop speaking. It's the third generation where they lose
language. Is that happening?
Is that happening? Yes. So I have one of my friends that she's a third generation, and her last name is Hernandez, but they only can say hola.
Really?
Yeah, so what happened to you? Everybody, probably you have a hard time because you look like 100% Latina.
What happened in that case? Is it just...
It just came from Texas.
Assimilated.
But again, that's a border town.
Yes.
I mean, border state.
Now I hope I don't offend anybody
okay.
here or you, but I say the only difference between the Hispanic immigrants and every other immigrant group is this. When the other groups come over, there's no going back. So they're forced to assimilate. I mean, they can gather in communities like Little Saigon here, where they speak Vietnamese all day long. And
what do you mean they can't go back?
Well, they can't easily go back and forth between the two countries. Especially in the old days when you
during the Great Recession, we had a reverse flow.
I'm not talking, but that was
people were going back because there was
not back to Vietnam and not back
to
Cambodia
okay,
or something.
Okay,
but in. Because of the proximity, the Hispanics are so close, they can easily go back and forth across the border,
I
and I think that prolongs the language. I think the fact that you go back and forth keeps the language alive, whereas if they had to go to Africa to reconnect with Hispanic speakers, it wouldn't last. And that's what happens. So usually by the third generation, with maybe the exception of Hispanics, but I'm even seeing in the Hispanic community, by the third generation, and we've talked about this, I met the people from Univision and Telemundo and some other stuff at some conferences we've been to, and they said, as much as we hate to admit it, we lose our audience by the third generation. They get assimilated into American culture, and they no longer speak the mother tongue.
Again, a repeat parallel.
Yes.
So we're afraid of something that's not true. These people are hardworking. They're harder working than we are, all these immigrant groups. They have the same values we want them to have of work hard and opportunity. They're not looking to get a free handout.
But every one of those other immigrant populations, Paul, at some point or the other, the United States stopped looking at them as being immigrants.
The Irish, nobody cares anymore if you're Irish.
Right.
Did once.
Now you also look white Anglo-Saxon.
Right.
Okay? So you've lost your language, and now you look white Anglo-Saxon. Mm-hmm. Is that why versus somebody who looks different, skin tone is different, and even though they lose their language?
It's hard to assimilate if you have different skin tones.
It is hard. And so that's why how we come in as a Triunfo Corporation in the office is, so you have the Latino business idea. We are the middle company who are going to make sure everything taken care of so you can continue running the business for your niche market.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have to worry about any of this stuff. We go to the city. We help them to connect with the bank, with the insurance company. So we help them to get rid of all the nonsense that they're getting scared of. Like, oh, they're not going to help me because I'm Latino. Or they're not going to allow me to open my business because I'm immigrant. So we
and
help.
And some of that is there. When I opened bars and restaurants, truthfully, why I was hired wasn't just because I knew how to do it, because I was white.
Right.
Truthfully. And I stand in front of the city council that was all white, and I'd argue to open a Vietnamese market or a Vietnamese bar or a Hispanic market. And I got a whole different result than when they tried to do it.
One of the weirdest experiences I've ever had was actually addressing, and I'm going to call them out, the city of Torrance.
Yeah.
Okay? On a spa project.
Mm-hmm.
Because the owners or the two ladies that were basically the applicants for the spa project, one was Chinese American, one of the top producers for Coldwell Banker, commercial, but still spoke with a accent, and a Filipina, 4 foot nothing, okay? And all that these white people on the city council in Torrance could see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were these two Asian women basically wanting to open a massage parlor down the street.
Exactly.
In Lomita.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right? That's all they could see.
Exactly.
So I actually had to go to the city council, and I stood there, and I gave them my credentials.
Mm-hmm.
And name-dropped working on a Ritz-Carlton and a Four Seasons and a Hyatt and stuff like this, and assured them that the quality of what this facility is that we were designing was equivalent to a destination resorts facility.
Right.
And that is the only... It literally went to city council for approval, and I'm looking around, and I hated to basically see it, but there was a bias based on the fact that their background.
I did it all the time, and that's why I got hired over and over again.
She lived in Palos Verdes and was one of the top 10% of producers for Coldwell Banker in the country.
Exactly.
It didn't make a difference.
Yep.
Exactly. I saw it a dozen times in a dozen bars I built, and you must see it in your business.
I see it all day long.
So not only do they not understand the system and the process, if they go through it, they get treated differently.
Yep. So that's why we take away all that nonsense. And how easy for California to open a business? You can get a business literally open in 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have to wait. And that's one of the differences if we were coming back from any Hispanic country, is that the bureaucracy is always take weeks or months to open a business. When I explain to somebody that investing from Mexico and say, hey, you can have your business open in 24 hours. And they look at me, so you have a connections?
Yeah. Right.
Who
do you know? I say, I don't know anybody. Just make sure
I know the how.
Yes, and you do the way they want it. That's one thing that I learned. And as soon as I move in here, I start studying how does the American system work. If they ask you a question, you answer, they will give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't give an answer, they will not give it to you.
And this is what makes this different even to Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have conversations with people, Europeans,
mm-hmm.
okay, because you go, well, it's not just people from Central America. It's not from people from developing countries that are coming to the United States. It's people coming from developed countries.
Exactly.
And the reason is this. There's less barriers to ownership. There's less barriers to achievement, okay? if you are a nobody with no connections.
Yes.
Yep.
In Europe, if you are inside
equality,
the circle,
we believe in equality.
You're solid. If you're outside the circle, it's hard to get in.
You're out,
Right? If you're not a blood of this or a second generation of that or a member of a club from the high college, the right college, you have issues.
Because, again, our founding principle was equality. All men are created equal. Everybody has the same opportunity.
But a lot of people will say this, Paul, and this is a question I want to ask relevant to the Latino population, or Latino business ownership, is many people are saying, in general, the country, but specifically California, is not business friendly.
Right.
It, you know, people are, it's too many taxes, people are moving out of the state.
Too many regulations.
Too many regulations, all this stuff. My bias is because of my own personal experience. My reference point is, man, if you think this is bad, try opening up a business in Kuwait as a non-Kuwaiti, right? Yes. 50% of your business is owned by somebody else who only happens to have the right passport. They don't even have to lift a finger to do a damn thing.
Exactly.
And that applies everywhere, right?
Yep.
Okay.
We had a gentleman who does consulting in India. He is Indian businessman. He went on Obama's tour when they went a couple years ago to India to try and establish relations there, better relations. And he said, you think this is bad? Go to India. He said, India, you go there once and you know why they named it India? Because it stands for I'll never do it again. It's the most regulated,
bureaucratic. Sounds like an American Indian.
Yeah. He said, you think this is bad? It takes you years to go through the bureaucracy. Lots of people you got to pay off and bribe.
So here's my question. Specifically to California, specifically to your own experience with your own existing clients, okay? Are you seeing similar situation? Is there a flight out of the state for people?
Yeah, no. What I'm seeing is they open a second business in another state, and they're staying in California. They're not leaving. The people who have business, they're complaining, of course, like everybody else.
About the high taxes.
The high taxes, insurance, regulation, and stuff like that. But they're staying here. They're opening more business in Southern California, and they're also opening business in another state.
Like where Texas?
Texas is one of them.
Texas
is
huge.
Because a lot of people will also tell you that, you know, an immigrant as a population, okay, may be the most vulnerable, right, to people that are going to come in, to legalities, to filings, to all this stuff.
And sometimes it's the knowledge is the problem.
Right. And you, when you have somebody like El Triunfo in your, you know, and Carlos in your corner, then you have maybe reduced the risk a little bit because you have people looking out for you from day one and putting the building blocks in the right way, right?
Correct.
Okay. But people will tell you, even with that case, even if you have, you know, that, you know, high-rise attorney, I think is how they refer to them, you know, that
high-powered attorney.
They call them high-rise because they're in big buildings, basically, right? And even though you're paying the top fees.
We're a high-rise radio station.
We're a high-rise radio station, right?
Almost Ocean View.
Actually, we are Ocean View. Yeah, we're just not on the side of the building. But if you, some people will tell you that even if you have those right things put in the right place, you're still invulnerable. And if you're an immigrant population, then you're maybe more vulnerable because you're an immigrant population. And yet, you're seeing people opening more businesses.
Yep.
Opening businesses in other states, but then keeping themselves also in California.
Yes.
How do you explain the difference? How do you explain the difference of people basically ready to basically just pick up everything and move to Nevada, pick up everything, go to Texas, and yet you have people in the Latino population that are not doing that?
They're not doing that because they have the flexibility here and also have the beautiful weather, and they know how to live in California. Some other states, they're not going to have the same markets. They're not going to have the same friends or food. So it seems to be a lot easier for the
familiarity.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you another question. So,
go ahead.
Because this has been speculated. As the Hispanic populations grow in traditionally other border states, like Texas particularly, there is an assumption that they may be the next ones to flip blue, particularly if the Republican Party does not change course and continues to push away immigrants out of the party.
But that's a misnomer. That's a misnomer. I mean, again...
Well, it's not. They're saying that Texas and all these others will stop being Republican bastions and become Democratic bastions.
But you defined the premise based on cultural identity. Okay, your premise was as these states become more Latino,
They'll become more democratic.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not. Because again, and somebody actually posed the statement on Carlos's feed before we went to the break about how most Latinos actually cite their political affiliation based on entities that represent their religious beliefs and belief systems.
Yep.
Okay? So a liberal democratic entity that is seen as being very loose and not really having rigid
religious family oriented,
right, is not going to appeal.
But they've been driven out of the party by all this anti-immigrant rhetoric.
Right. So it's not the first generation, and this is where I'm bringing you to. If you're talking about second and third generation immigrant, then what you're talking about is not a cultural thing. You're talking about a generational thing.
I disagree. I think that the Republican Party could be the natural home for Hispanics, but they've been pushed out, and they're not welcomed, just as they pushed out other people, liberals like me. And I think that as that party continues to push people away to appeal to an ever smaller base, they're going to see themselves become a minority. They're already a minority.
But the Democratic Party hasn't embraced them either.
I'm not saying they've done a great job. Well, they've done a better job.
And if you don't believe me, ask anybody who's African-American how the Democratic Party worked out for them.
But still, 70-80% of African-Americans vote Democratic. They may not like it. They may welcome another choice, but they don't vote Republican. Because they've been driven out of that party, too. The party of Lincoln that freed the slaves has driven them all out.
So let me ask you this question, Carlos. I know this is an informal survey, right? But you have enough people that you know that you deal with that, you know, there's two things that are guaranteed to bring up your accent and your ethnicity is politics and religion, usually, the discussion. Right. So let's say that you have maybe asked this question of people a little bit or, you know, encountered feedback from people. Would you say that in the 10 years, let's say, that you've been doing this and dealing with people, that within the Latino community, has there been a shift in political affiliation?
No. They're still the same.
And what are they? What are most Hispanics and Republicans?
Business owners, that is one of the things. If I ask a regular individual who will file a 1040, they kind of tend to be more Democrat.
Okay.
Right. If I ask a business owner, they tend to be more Republican.
Right.
So,
and aren't they frightened by Trump and his that we're going to round up Hispanics and drive them out of the country here?
Yeah, they're scared because the crazy politics is an idea on immigration, but they're here. They say, if I'm paying my taxes, the individuals, they're scared to file taxes now.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who has their business, they've been filing, they're doing their normal thing.
Why are they scared to file taxes? Because they'll be targeted then?
Yeah, they think they will be targeted. And for people that have the IT number, they're required to renew that on a yearly basis now. And they know exactly where they are, who they are, when they come in. That's one of the crazy questions they ask now. They say, when do you come into the United States?
Mm-hmm.
So that's scary
these
for
are
some
people. Who because of economic
but what
reasons.
What percent of the population that you deal with are that?
We are like 90% more business owners.
Right.
So they're focusing more on the other side.
So what I'm hearing you say is as people become business owners, they naturally become more conservative and therefore gravitate towards the conservative party. And yet, that conservative party is doing everything they can to push those people out or make them feel unwelcome.
Yeah. So this is one of those things that have to change and change the mentality and because we're here to make this country great again.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's already great. That's why you're here.
Yeah.
I always said that the natural party for the...
Because you actually recognize that it's great.
Yeah.
When other people forgot that it was.
The natural affiliation for the Hispanic population, because they tend to be more family-oriented, they tend to be more conservative, they tend to be more religious, should be, and you're saying is, the Republican Party. And yet, all the surveys show that since the Trump takeover of that party and the extreme anti-immigrant rhetoric, that they not only didn't vote for Trump, in record numbers, but that they're either being pushed out of the party or being afraid to do anything.
But again, okay, we got to get out of this mindset, okay? And I think this is really what is happening,
right?
Okay, is whether I'm registered Republican or Democrat,
right?
The sense of blind loyalty to party
is disappearing.
Is disappearing. The only place it somehow is still being believed is inside the inner circle, right? But people are voting on issues.
Well, that's not true. They still are voting.
The only time you vote on party is when you don't have a position on the issue, Paul.
Why is it that we can't get a third party going then? In Orange County, the largest group
because
of registered voters are not Republican anymore or even Democrat.
They're independent.
Independent, declined right. to state. Well, and yet, when an independent runs, they can't win.
Because the two other parties have monopolies on everything that is needed
access
as part
those,
of
right.
the electoral process.
Access okay? to the ballots.
Right, and you need a certain number of airtime, and the airtime is a certain amount of money,
right. yeah.
and all of this stuff, and they've already... I mean, it's like the parties that buy the slate mailers, right?
Right.
They buy the slate mailers before they even have a friggin' candidate.
Right.
Okay, so if you bought the slate mailers, then nobody else has a point of entry. It's already locked out.
But now with ways around the traditional media, like we're doing here, podcasting and social media and the internet and all the other things that are happening, I think that will happen in our lifetime. I agree. You're going to continue to see the erosion of the two parties. You're either going to see a third party pop up or no party pop up, and we're going to go back to what the forefathers really envisioned, which was you vote for the candidate and not a
look. It depends on the level of the game that you're playing in, right? If you're at the regional level, or you're not even regional level, if you're at a state level, or if you're at the national level. The network that you need to be involved in, the buy-in, the entry point, is very costly mm-hmm. because of the way it has been established.
Right.
Okay? The driving force behind that is the fact that you don't have term limits. If you had term limits where you as a candidate could not run for more than one or two terms, okay, just like you was president, right? If you had that, the companies, the airwaves, the channels would have to work harder.
Yep.
To basically secure the money from those individual candidates every two terms. You're not just dependent on, you know, it's a done deal, here's my price, you pay me.
I disagree, and here's why. Because it's really not the candidates coming up with the money. There's a set group of interests that are funding all these politics that raise $50 million for this kid down in Georgia to challenge the House seat there. He didn't come up with the $50 million. It pours in from all these places. It seeks opportunity. And this, until you get money out of politics,
Paul,
the candidate's irrelevant. Whether it's the same candidate every time or you change him every time.
You can do that for one, two, three races every election cycle and spend that kind of money. Okay, when you have an election cycle that basically includes half of the members of Congress, half of the members of the Senate,
right.
you can't pay for that. You're not going to be able to fund it with the level of $50 million, $200 million, $300
million.
The money will have to be spread a lot further.
I don't think there's been evidence. We have term limits here in California. I don't think that's solved anything.
Where do we have term limits?
You can only serve so many terms in all these seats.
How many terms can you serve?
Most of them are like, not at the federal level, but at the state level, you can't serve but more than, because all they do is they bounce around. They go, one week, this term I'm going to be a state senator, next term I'll be a county commissioner, and then I'll be back to being a mayor, and then they just bounce all over.
So we're getting off the topic here in this manner, okay?
Yeah.
I think where you are going with this, and I agree with this, is if you're on a regional level,
mm-hmm.
if you're on a municipal level, okay, the point of entry with new technology, with live Facebook live feeds, with internet-based radio stations like this one, is that you are no longer dependent on getting permission and funding and support from the wherewithal people.
The powers of the
Okay, you can sit down and you can give your opinion for an hour on an air station like this, on a show like this, and it would be out there for it to go viral if enough people watch it.
Right.
Right? And if it's topic specific and if the topic touches people, it's an extremely powerful situation. You guys both know, anybody who's watched or listened knows that I'm, you know, on a friggin' tear with the toll road these days, right?
You are?
Yeah. Actually, one person, Greg Sullivan, who's my co-host, he says, you know, if you want me to fill in for you, I can fill in for you. All I have to do is just rant against the toll road. That'll do that. Right. I would like to think that there's more to me than that, but
right now there isn't.
It is a pretty powerful thing, but I will tell you how powerful this is, right? You have enough people using social media on a topic of that nature, very focused, very effective, right? It has actually gotten attention of certain people that are elected officials, okay, to where they have come out with public statements against the paths of the toll road. People that I would never, if I had to put money 6 months ago that they would basically take that position, I would have never bet on that.
You rattled off some of them the last time here. Some of these long, staunch Republican people, Daryl Issas of the world, that never fought the toll road when it went through my neighborhood because we didn't have social media.
Well, I know it's off topic, but I would like to thank Daryl Issas and Bill Breaux and Todd Spitzer and Pat Bates for actually standing up and saying no, that this will be damaging to communities. No.
Didn't say that when it went through Laguna Canyon or Rancho Santa Margarita, because we didn't have that kind of power of social media.
So, guys and lady, Paul is still upset about you because you didn't protect his neighborhood, but I appreciate the fact that you're standing out for ours.
Right.
Let me
got to wrap up here.
I want to just say one thing. Okay, so with the state becoming more and more Latino as a population, as a marketplace, are we going to continue to have this sort of... and I'm not talking about the bias, okay?
Yeah.
I'm talking about just in general how we deal with this. Are we going to continue to have this sort of Latino, non-Latino, or are we going to move more towards sort of a hybrid situation, a crossover situation? Because, I mean, I don't see how you have a state with more than 50% of the population as being a Latino population, and that's not accounting for... the Asian population, that's not accounting for the Middle Eastern or African American, right? That's just 47% by 2050 that's Latino.
Yes. We're going to be separate from everyone else.
Yeah, we're going to be connected. It's going to be just one big group. It's not going to be separated by Latino or anything else. We came here to stay, and nobody will kick us out.
This is the real question, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been here since 85. Every year I kick myself for not basically learning Spanish.
But you're learning a little bit now.
But I haven't really made an effort to do that.
I've been here since 1845.
And as we get older, it becomes harder to learn new tricks. Paul's a perfect example of that, right? And I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah.
Now, you adopted a young lady from Mexico.
Yes.
Do you speak Spanish?
No, not a word.
How long have you how long ago did you adopt her?
She's 11, she's 25, so 14 years ago.
So for 14 years, you've had a person in your household or connected to you that basically speaks Spanish, right? And you didn't do that. How do you feel about that? I mean, I'm just curious.
I feel terrible now. I feel awful. No, we tried. That was a little, I'll say that was a little different.
I'm just curious because now you have a grandchild too.
She didn't, it's very interesting, her evolution. When she came here, she wanted to forget everything about being Hispanic. Her life in Mexico was not a good life. She had a horrible life. She was beat up and abused and people died and left her and abandoned and all that. She wasn't hungry to do this. She really, in many ways, we tried to encourage her to stay, to keep the language and to do this. I even tried to get her to teach me stuff, and she'd say, no, I don't want any of that. Forget all that stuff.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, like what my great-grandfather went through, I don't want to hear any of that stuff. We came, that was awful, this is better. Now, interesting enough that she has a child, she's rediscovered that. She's refound her language. She can speak it better than she ever did in all the years she lived with us. She's 25 now and lives on her own. And she's around other Hispanic speakers, so that helps. And she's insistent, absolutely insistent that her son know Spanish when she tried very hard to forget Spanish.
So how is Grandpa going to communicate? Is it just going to be in English, or are you going to...
I don't mind. I've picked up a little, as I said, we speak a little Spanglish now. I can, like when I go over to their house, they live with his family, and they're all first generation, and they don't speak English, number of them, and I don't speak Spanish. So together we have this kind of hybrid Spanglish. I know a little bit of Spanish, and they know a little bit of English.
I'm trying to get to the point where it's not a forced thing for you. But is it something that you would basically feel like you want to put energy toward picking up as something, another way to communicate with your grandson, or is it not important? I'm trying to understand.
I think it is part of the problem is what my great-grandmother went through. The older it is, the harder it is to learn a new language. It really is. It isn't that I'm adverse to it or wouldn't want to. It's hard for me to do it.
Yeah, that's on the personal level. But for corporations, big companies like banks or any other industry, they're seeing that it's necessary to speak the language. It's like when you call a 1-800 number, you always say, press 1 for English, press 2 for Spanish. So that is going to become more and more. So that is the trend.
I never understood why it says press 2 for Spanish and it says it in English.
So
I think what you're going to see is a high. So exactly what the Donald Trump voters are in revolt. All my friends in the Midwest, they don't want to see globalism. They don't want to see melting pot. They want to go back to this notion that we were one race, one culture. What Donald Trump talked about at great length in his speech in Poland that so many people are praising, Western culture, Western ideals, that is exclusive. That means English and Western ideals, and it excludes Muslims, it excludes Mexicans, it excludes Chinese, it excludes anybody else that doesn't look and talk and sound exactly like us. And that's never been America since the day we were founded.
So I want to share something with you that just came up. Who was it? Can you see who it is?
Josue Batalla.
He says, being a millennial, I can tell you that the Republican and the Democratic Party are not as appealing as being an independent.
Yes, that's...
And for many Hispanic millennials, that is the case.
I was watching a thing on C-SPAN about the Millennial Project, a millennial that's put together a whole thing to study and create some sort of activist group, like ARP supposedly speaks for us now, a group that would speak for them.
Yes, you're old.
Yeah, and, right. That's all.
AARP.
And he said the same thing, and we hear it all the time on the station, that millennials are already breaking down. They don't feel an affiliation to any – they don't have long-standing affiliations to any groups. They don't have it to baseball teams. They don't have it to religious groups. They don't have it to one language. They don't have it to a company. They're very fungible.
So you know here's, and I kind of wanted to do this today in this way, and it's turned out this
Carlos,
way.
Carlos, he yeah. Have five
no,
words.
No. I mean, Carlos is here as a representative of the immigrant experience, just like I am.
Right.
Right. He's more recent, actually. Yeah. We're like difference of about probably 5 to 10 years maybe between us, but it's a very similar experience. You're three generations back, and right. It's a very similar experience, yeah. Right? And he's here representing his community, but he's also representing the immigrant experience. And what I wanted to show is not only that Carlos and El Triunfo are a resource in the state of California, locally to Orange County, and
help
that specifically to help to navigate, which anybody who's in business will tell you. Expert opinions and assistance for certain things, especially if somebody is there available for you from day one to establish the right. Foundation, the building blocks in the right way to where you feel you can trust them. And if it happens to be on a cultural level, great, yeah. Right? But all of the stuff that we've talked about, all of these sort of imaginations, all this like discussions about, well, what political party are you affiliated with? What is going to happen when you get older? All this stuff. My whole purpose was to do this. Is that anybody who's out there that looks at another person from another culture and thinks they are different, they somehow don't put on their pants one leg at a time like you do.
Us versus them.
Okay? Think again. Okay? We all have a very similar existence.
Yes.
There was a famous cartoon when I was a kid, and it said that...
So they have a cartoon?
Way back when. Way. They only had one.
What do you mean? You mean those things that they painted on the inside of cave walls?
The things they painted on the inside of a newspaper, which might as well be a cave wall now here. It was called Pogo. And the famous quote that he was known for is, "We have met the enemy, and he is us."
Right.
And yeah. We're all the same.
Right. We are all the same. And I appreciate Carlos being here to help drive that point home. At the same time, I want to make sure that everybody who's listening, who doesn't know, or listens to the show later, okay, has a way of getting hold of him.
Please,
and El Triunfo.
Yeah.
Share the information.
Yeah, of course. And for everybody who is listening to the OC Talk Radio and Rat and Associates, we have a great promotion.
What's our proposal?
It's a free consultation.
What?
The first one. If you want to open a business or you have questions about your taxes or anything related to money, you can stop by the office. It's the 1415 East 17th Street in Santa Ana, 92705. And the phone number is 714-953-2707. Or you can also find us on the website.
Give the website.
ElTriunfo.com is ELTRIUNFO.com.
And what does El Triunfo mean?
It's a beautiful word, triumph.
Oh. Seriously, you just asked that question on open air?
I didn't know.
Yeah. I was waiting for that.
Okay,
I didn't know. Usually that's the first question.
I'm going to add to that because Carlos and I, Carlos is a friend and he's a client, and we have basically a living example of how brand environment basically work as part of a business unique yeah. business experience.
Beautiful.
You go to their offices, you can see that. But I will add to that. He's made a free he's talking about a free consultation if you're establishing a business. If you're in a business that has a brick and mortar component, you're going to need to have a sensitivity to how you position that brick and mortar element.
Yeah.
Right? If whether you're in product related or service related, restaurant, retail, whatever. So when you have that free consultation scheduled with El Triunfo and with Carlos, I will also be there, and we will add into that free consultation input on how you deal with your environment, physical environment.
And you know what's interesting to me is one of the things I...
Because all of those components are very important.
All the... I haven't dealt much with the Hispanic community other than I adopted a Hispanic daughter, and now I'm learning more about that world. I have had a lot of interaction with the Vietnamese community and the Cambodian community here because I helped build bars and restaurants for a number of years. And one of the things that struck me and still strikes me is how little emphasis they put on branding. You can go to, I can take you to 20 Vietnamese restaurants right now, and they look like dumps.
Yeah.
They're basic, boring, chipped floor, whatever. They put zero into how it looks. But the food is fantastic.
Yeah, that's one thing that we say in the office. There is a life before rat, and there is another life after rat.
Yeah,
because when the rat came along about 3 years, more than 3 years now, it was right before your wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he show up and say, this is what can I do?
We have happy anniversary, baby. Yeah. Today's our third anniversary.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
And there were so many people that show up and try to give me a product, say, oh, we're going to sell you the furniture. And Rat said, no, we're not going to sell you a furniture. We're going to sell you a way to run your business. This is going to be your stage. And since then, the whole El Triunfo way changed. They changed the mentality, changed the way how we talk to people, changed how we run the business. And I want to say thank you to you because...
It's my pleasure. It's been my pleasure.
Yes. And he said, I'm going to play with El Triunfo, and he's having so much fun spending somebody else's money, right?
Yeah.
Well, but in a good way.
Well, it's part of how then you break... Again, as you get assimilated, you find out that the greater American culture is very much about brand, very much about identity. It's very much about impressions.
But here's the difference for me. It is about a brand and it is about identity, except it's not about repackaging the same brand and identity that somebody else has. Mm-hmm. And this is where it's a difference between ready-to-wear clothing and custom-tailored.
Yep.
Okay? We try to custom-tailor the outfit, the stage upon which the likes of Carlos perform their business, to where it be a reflection of them.
Right.
Okay? It's not what I have two or three binders on my shelf that have, you
put
know,
you, into that
you want this look, or this look, and I'm going to make that clothing fit him.
Right.
Okay, it has to be custom tailored. And I will tell you, the added complication with Carlos is that when we met, he was running his business, and it wasn't the look even just, but there was an operational component of how the business was run. You had people that were basically operating out of individual offices.
That's correct.
Yeah. Right? And that came with certain issues.
Yeah.
Right?
So people suddenly say, this is my office. I want to work on my own.
Right.
Have my own little decoration throughout the office.
Right. And so there was an inconsistency of how the individual offices looked, but also there was a disconnect in the way that the corporate culture was.
Yep.
And we talked about this. We're like, okay, we're going to go to this open floor plan with people in it, all in one room without separation walls, and we're going to have to give it the time for people to adjust.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
And then Chase, a year later, they post something on Wall Street Journal and say, oh, Chase make a decision to have open floor set up.
So there you go, Chase. We were there before you.
Yeah. We were there.
And I'm glad. Thank you for doing that. Yeah. I really appreciate that. That really makes what we do meaningful. It's not about the decoration. It's really about being a business consultant, just like you are, when it comes to payroll taxes, when it comes to how you incorporate your business, make sure you have the insurance and liability coverage, all of that stuff. We do the same thing in conjunction. That's why I said, when you call El Triunfo and you set up your complimentary consultancy, if you are a brick-and-mortar business, whether you are existing or you, and even more importantly, if you are establishing, correct?
Yes.
Yes. That you do that on the right footing. And if you happen to be a bar or something of that nature, The gentleman over there, I'm going to turn the camera on him. He's coming along for the ride, too.
I still know how to do all that. Yeah, I can get you your permits. I haven't done that in probably – I did one about a year ago. That was the last time I did one. Just and I don't know how people find me. It's all through the old word-of-mouth network. I haven't really advertised
I know they can
yet.
Find you. I can see, like, 6 bottles of whiskey right here.
So the man is an expert. He has all the stuff. Thank you so much, Carlos. Go ahead and give the information for the website and the telephone number again, please, before we
– Yes. It is 714-953-2707 and is www.eltriunfo.com. ELTRIUNFO.com.
And if you need to get hold of us, The Rad Life on Facebook, and that's spelled RAAD Life, you guys. If you know how to live it, you know how to spell it. L I F.
Oh, okay. I like
and,
that.
And if you need to get hold of me on via email, it's Rod, RAAD, period, Gantus, GHANTOUS, @gmail.com. If you want to call, you can call my cell phone, 949-212-8299. If you have any questions regarding the show or other shows, if you somehow can't get hold of Carlos or El Triunfo and you want to be reminded how to get hold of them, this was really an important conversation for me because it is the world in which we live. Especially in the state of California. We're facing realities and changes due to age, due to demographics.
It's the world of misperception where too many of my friends live.
And you know what? We have way too many fake news and misperceptions these days, and it's important for us to have some candid, open conversations, even if we differ. The reality that we live in the state of California is that we are looking at a very diverse community. Certain concentrations are changing in terms of ethnicity.
Yes.
And certain city configurations are changing.
But it's still a mixture. It's still a soup. It's still a bowl of soup that we've all mixed together here. It always has been and always will be.
Right. But the individual ingredients in that soup
are changing.
Are changing. And honoring and respecting the individual ingredients is where you enjoy the soup versus you are basically barking against it.
That's why we can wear the salsa to make it special.
Yeah, see? You need a little salsa in your life.
We brought the booze. You bring the salsa.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for joining us. Let us know what you think of the show. We'd love to hear from you. Again, you can reach me at 949-212-8299 or The Rad Life on Facebook or Rod, RAAD, period, Gantus, GHANTOUS, @gmail.com. And we will see you next week.
You have been listening to The Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gantos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.